but confirm that drowning was the cause of death. The police report showed that he was not wearing a life preserver, hit a rock, and was thrown from the boat. 3. Although one of the husband's relatives, a state policeman, pushed for a murder investigation because of animosity between the couple, the case was closed.
She clicked on the first attachment, and after some churning, the police report opened in a new screen. She squinted to read the small print on the cracked face of her phone, but finally gave up and opened the autopsy attachment. It was even worse, a bad scan of a photocopy that might have been blurred to start with. She put her phone down and rubbed her temples. She went to her backpack and grabbed the Wings and Roots binder and Walker's folder. The annual reports Cooper had given her included financial summaries, board minutes, and other material. These, plus the information Counselor Walker provided, seemed like the perfect way to use this extra work time. Pages of numbers and official-sounding jargon. She opened Cooper's blue binder to the budget sheets, wishing she had paid more attention to bookkeeping in school. She started with January, and found the line-item accounting of the tribe's grant to the program noted as income. In the narrative summary, she read how the money was spent. Funding the program for Navajo youth. She thumbed through the rest of the summaries. The grant money was always listed and accounted for. How much the tribe had initially given Wings and Roots, how much had been spent that month, and the total amount remaining. It looked legitimate. She'd double-check the expenditure pages next. If everything jibed, she could tell Counselor Walker to worry about something else, like her daughter, Annie. But another entry caught her attention, a pattern of donations. $25,000 every 3 months. She went back to the January summary where she'd seen it first. She moved on to February, March, and April. Over that period, the group's income from fundraising and grants declined to only a few hundred dollars. There were adjustments in expenses, but the income-to-outgo gap widened. Then came the anonymous gift, and the program was back in the black. She double-checked to make sure that the tribal grant, earmarked for the program, hadn't been somehow diverted into this unnamed donor fund. That money was secure, as far as she could tell, and devoted to subsidizing Navajo students for adventures in the outdoors. Who was behind the $25,000 donations? The wealthy grandparents of a child the program had helped? She didn't know any Navajos who had that kind of money, but the program helped non-Navajos, too. Maybe a former student who appreciated what she'd learned and used it for a successful career was pitching in. She left the budget summaries and turned to Cooper's compilation of the minutes from the monthly board meetings. Her director's report was high on the agenda. In January, Cooper explained that the budget deficit was caused by a problem with an anticipated grant from a foundation that had agreed to support new non-paying students. The announcement had generated great publicity and a deluge of applications. The foundation reneged on its commitment, Cooper had written, but the agency had already accepted some of the new non-paying students, mostly teenagers from what she called difficult situations. The board agreed to honor its commitment to the teens already accepted. Cooper said she had alerted the staff that if the budget situation did not resolve itself, the program would have to be cut and group leaders laid off. She stressed the role of fundraising to fill the gap. In February, Cooper told the board that $25,000 the previous month from an anonymous donor had put the group back in the black. We received a cashier's check in the mail made out to Wings and Roots with a note that said the money was to be spent as needed. She wrote that she was exploring all options to find another underwriter to cover the unbudgeted increase in enrollment and to reduce expenses. The pattern repeated with another donation for the same amount arriving in April, July, and then quarterly. The money didn't cover the entire deficit, but Cooper made enough other cuts to keep the group from going under. From what Bernie read, the board hadn't questioned the source of the donation, at least not as a group where minutes were taken. Had Domingo Cruz made the appeal to Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous? Was this somehow connected to his disappearance? She wondered if this could be the money Franklin had mentioned that Dom himself gave. Could he be involved in the illegal pottery business with Manzanares? She thought about the lucrative market for ancient Indian pottery and filed the thought away. In the minutes of the July meeting, she read, as they discussed the budget, Cooper reminded the board that she had not had a raise in the 5 years she had been director. She said that Cruz, Mayfair, and some of the other staff volunteered to work extra hours to help with the budget situation. The budget summary showed Cruz and Mayfair donating their overtime salaries with the hours recorded as if they were cash. She didn't know enough about accounting to know if this was standard procedure, but at least the group was transparent about it. The tribe's money, to Bernie's eyes, seemed properly documented. She wondered if the board had praised Cooper for securing the $25,000 gifts, or blamed her for letting the funds drop so low. The minutes were silent about that. Putting the report aside, she skimmed the paperwork from Counselor Walker, copies of what she'd read in the Wings and Roots minutes and clippings from the Navajo Times, mostly bad news. The newspaper articles quoted Walker as saying she thought there was something questionable about the way the agency operated. One of the stories confirmed what Cooper had told her about Walker's relative who worked for the program and had been fired. The reporter quoted Walker as saying that the man had been a whistleblower, and that was why he'd lost his job. More awake than ever, Bernie thought about going to the kitchen for a cup of hot chocolate, but decided against it. Setting down the reports next to her backpack, she walked to the window. The storm had tapered off to a light flurry. At this rate, snow plows and sand trucks would do their magic, and she'd be able to get back to Shiprock as soon as the tow truck liberated her unit. A patch of light reflected off the snow. It came from the other side of the house, the wing where Merrily's guest room was. Maybe Franklin was having trouble sleeping. If he was awake, she could retrieve her blanket and ask some questions about Dom, Merrily, and Manzanares. She wondered if he had heard Dom talk about the generous but mysterious donor. It would save her some steps in the morning and the hassle of a follow-up call. She stepped into the hallway, triggering a motion-activated nightlight that made it easy to find her way. Heading quietly toward the guest room, she saw that the door to what must be Merrily's bedroom stood open. The rumpled bed was empty. As she moved further down the hallway, she realized she didn't have to worry about being quiet. The sobbing coming from the guest room would have drowned out any noise she might have made. She moved a few steps closer and saw the two of them, their arms around each other as if forming a circle of protection. Her brain was packed with questions, but she understood the power of grief. She went back to the chair and thought about how nice it would be to be home again. When the phone woke her, it was beginning to get light outside. She spoke to Captain Largo, then called the tow company again and learned she was next on their list. She dressed and walked into the cold, bright new morning to clear her thinking and get her bearings for the challenge ahead. Snow had filled last night's tracks and sparkled on the trees and power lines in the pre-dawn glow. She didn't go for her usual run, but she sang morning prayers, brushed off her unit, and scraped the windshield. Then, knowing he was an early riser, she called the lieutenant to see what he had learned from reviewing the Wings and Roots files. Perhaps, as often happened, his insights and his connections would surprise her. Leaphorn answered on the first ring, his voice strong. After some pleasantries, he asked,
"So, did you have any questions about what I sent you?"
"I couldn't read the attachments clearly, sir, but I assume your summary covered it."
"That's right. I looked at the material you gave me from Counselor Walker. She has a reputation as a watchdog of tribal money, and those anonymous donations that keep the Wings and Roots rolling along got my attention, too. I'm going to do some additional checking. So far, I don't see any problem with misuse of Navajo funds. Any questions on that?"
The rhythm of footsteps drew her attention to the hallway. Merrily, dressed in a dark skirt and red turtleneck sweater with a large turquoise necklace and matching earrings, nodded to her and headed to the kitchen. No questions as of now, sir. I looked at the agency's minutes and financial reports for a few years. I'm not an expert, but it seemed to me that all the Navajo money was appropriately used. I puzzled over those donations, too. I appreciate your looking into that.
I heard that a blizzard closed the interstate last night. Did you get caught up in that?
Yes, sir. That's why I had time to review the financial documents Mrs. Cooper gave me. She ended the call and joined merrily. The aroma of dark coffee dripping into the mug stirred her brain to pleasant, professional wakefulness. Good morning. The coffee smells good. Merrily gently pushed the cup that had just brewed across the countertop toward her. I heard that the interstate is open. Local school and government offices have a 2-hour delay. I hope that doesn't include your tow truck or my clients for this morning. I saw you on the phone. Is there news about Dom? Bernie held the steaming cup of coffee in both hands. No. The captain called to tell me that Larry Hoffman died early this morning. Poor man. Those injuries must have been worse than they seemed. It looks like the cause of death was a drug overdose. I know he had trouble with his back. Maybe he took too many painkillers. I liked Larry. It's a shock to hear that he's dead. I didn't think he was in bad shape physically, except for the shoulder and the broken nose. His death... Hold on, Bernie interrupted, hearing a noise outside the house. I think the tow truck is here. The driver had climbed out of the truck to study the situation. It looked as though he'd put in a full night's work.
Sorry, he said. I couldn't get here sooner. This will just take a minute or two.
When he smiled, Bernie noticed his dimples. I appreciate you coming, she said.
I could have been here last night except for the big mess on the interstate. I just finished with that and stopped for breakfast.
He attached a chain, pulled the unit up the snowy embankment, and was on his way in 20 minutes. Back in the kitchen, Merrily was stirring sugar into her mug. We were talking about Larry and his accident, Bernie said, picking up the thread again. You need to tell me about Manzanares's role in all this and your involvement with him. Merrily sighed.
I will. It's complicated. I offered to show you the greenhouse. Why don't we talk out there for a few minutes?
She opened the connecting door. The snow had slipped off the steep glass roof, and the sun shone in warmly.
It's lovely in here, isn't it?
Merrily closed the door behind them.
You know, I marvel at the amazing plants that thrive out there in nature, kind of like the girls we work with in the program. But these hothouse beauties are my passion. Unlike Manzanares, they are just what they seem to be, beautiful without deceit. I could kick myself for getting tied into him.
Bernie gazed through the greenhouse glass at the blue sky as she inhaled the irresistible sweetness of orange blossoms, a fragrance she remembered from her days at the University of New Mexico, when she would head to the biology department's greenhouse to study. One of the things that made her proud to be Navajo was the way her creation story honored plants, as well as the insect people and the animal people. Merrily motioned her to a bench near a vivid purple and red fuchsia. Tell me more about Manzanares's connection to you and your brother, she said.
He hates me, bullies me, does whatever he can to make me miserable. But like I said, you need to ask him. He hasn't spoken to Dom more than 2 or 3 times that I know of.
What about the girl who went to the hospital? Do you know about that?
Merrily grimaced. I heard about her. She couldn't have come across Datura growing out there in the winter, that's for sure. I don't think you'd find it in the Malpais anyway. As a cop, you know more about teens and drugs than I do, and how some kids think that what comes from a plant can't harm them. But the incident gives Counselor Walker another reason to try to shut down our program. Worrying about that woman keeps me awake at night.
Speaking of that, I heard Franklin crying last night. And I thought I heard your voice, too. For the first time since Bernie had met her, Merrily seemed uneasy, embarrassed.
Oh, sorry. I couldn't sleep because I kept thinking about Dom. I heard Michael weeping, and I thought maybe some of the tools I use as a counselor might help. Maybe they did. Maybe he helped me more than I helped him. We grieved together.
When I first talked to you about people to be notified about Dom, you didn't even mention Franklin. Why?
You asked about relatives, remember? Franklin's not related to us. Merrily twisted a ring on the middle finger of her right hand. Since Franklin and Dom lived together, I figured he already knew Dom was gone. Franklin worried that all the arguing they'd done recently about Dom becoming the program director had distracted my brother and caused him to have an accident. Bernie nodded.
Tell me what you know about Dom's financial situation. Franklin intimated that he didn't have a lot of money, but was making contributions to the program. The books show large anonymous donations.
You mean the $25,000? My brother lives from hand to mouth, just like I'm doing now without Roger. That was one reason I wanted to sell his photographs, or try to, in my online art store.
A person showed me one of Dom's petroglyph photos as the background for a site on the internet that's selling Indian artifacts. The merchandise looks suspicious, and
I told him to take those down. I begged him. I can't believe.
Bernie jumped in. Told who?
Merrily clenched her hands together, fingers overlapping. I didn't mean for any of this to happen. I only wanted to save Wings and Roots and help Dom sell his photos. And Larry? I don't understand how he could be dead.
Told who? Bernie's voice had more force this time. Manzanares?
He thought I'd poisoned Roger because of some herbal supplements I gave him, but Roger liked to get high. He lost control of the boat because of booze, not because of anything herbal. I'd never use plants to hurt someone. Manzanares kept threatening me with reopening the investigation, but he said he'd forget about it if I would let him use the petroglyph photos on his website and tell him where certain ones were taken. He said he wanted to work with us to keep the grave safe. What a liar!
She spat out the words. At the creak of the door to the greenhouse opening, they both swung around. Franklin walked toward them. He wore the shirt Bernie had brought in from the car, and there was a bulge in his pants pocket.
"Hey, ladies," he said. "What's up? You look too serious for such a bright morning."
"I was asking Merrily about some photos Dom took. His work seems to be linked to a website that's selling Indian pottery."
Franklin took a step closer.
"Why are you worried about that? Dom would never involve himself in anything that was questionable. There are mountains of pottery out there, new and old, legitimate stuff."
"And then there are the old, old pieces, some of them stolen from public land, from the looted caves I saw in the Malpais. Those pots go for a lot of money, enough to keep Wings and Roots in business."
"But you don't think Dom... He would never even consider doing anything like that. How dare you imply?"
Franklin's voice rose with anger. Bernie turned to Merrily.
"You need to tell me what's up with the photographs you've been selling, and the pottery, and what Manzanares' role here is." She looked up at Franklin. "And I'm curious about if and how you, Mr. Franklin, tie into all this."
Bernie saw the look on Franklin's face even before his hand quickly moved to his pocket. She pushed Merrily off the bench to the ground, fell on top of her to shield her body, and hoped the man was a bad shot. The bullet crashed through the glass behind them. Bernie scrambled to her feet as she watched Franklin sprint out the door toward the driveway. She looked at Merrily.
"You okay?"
"Yeah, he's running for my car." By the time Bernie got outside, all she could see was the back bumper of the black SUV speeding down the snow-covered street.
22. Jim Chi got to the classroom for the morning's training a few minutes early, hoping to encounter the deputy he knew from the Cibola County Sheriff's Department. He was in luck. After some small talk, Chi got to the point.
"I'm trying to find a rancher out your way who might have hired a guy whose family is worried about him.
They can't remember or never knew where he was working, except that it was a ranch in Cibola County. He hasn't come back or contacted them. The officer smiled.
What a bad boy. Well, at least I know the county where he's supposed to be. The best person to talk to would be Chris Manzanares. Maybe you've met him?
I've heard the name. My wife worked with him a little on the search that's underway out in the Malpais.
Yeah, he lives outside of Grants, and his family has run cattle there for years. He might be able to help you. Most ranchers aren't hiring in the winter. Hold on, I'll give you a cell.
The deputy pulled out his phone and hit a few buttons.
Ready for his number?
Thanks. This is convenient.
He's my poker buddy.
Chi checked the time and then walked out into the hall to make the call. When Manzanares answered, Chi explained the situation about George Curley.
That's an easy question. George worked on the ranch for me, oh, it must have been for a couple weeks, and then he said he was leaving for home. That was the last I saw of him.
When did the job end?
Oh, probably mid-November.
What was he doing for you?
I've been selling some lava rock for landscaping. He was helping with that.
So your place is in the Malpais?
My family has been there for years. Why all the questions?
Manzanares chuckled.
Don't tell me. Curly got himself in some kind of jam.
Could be.
She thought about it. When Curly said he was going home, did he say back to his wife or back to his mother?
He didn't say. He wasn't much of a talker.
His mother and his wife are both worried about him.
Too bad. I wish I could be of more help.
The hallway had started to clear when she ended the call, but he had one more piece of business to take care of before class. It was time to ask Caitlin for the photo. George Curley should have been home by now. He sent her a text. He'd need the photos when he took the next step, and notified area law enforcement to activate the missing person network. When the class ended at noon, Chi felt inspired and motivated to do all he could to help find missing kids and elders. He silently thanked Largo for sending him. He saw a text from Caitlin with instructions for picking up her husband's photo, a crucial part of locating the man if he actually was a missing person. He had arranged to meet Darlene for coffee before he drove back to Mama's house, and he found her at the IAIA cafeteria. She sat with a glass of water, fiddling with her phone. He got some coffee and a sandwich and joined her.
Hi,
Darlene said, smiling at him. Last night's drama seemed to have happened in a parallel universe.
How was your class?
Great, but I'm eager to get home.
He unwrapped his sandwich. Want half?
No thanks, save it for the trip. Guess what?
She didn't pause for him to speculate.
We made good progress on the video last night. It looks terrific, and Herbert added some cool stuff to the narration on his own. I wish you could have stayed and watched. CS will start the final edits tonight. They agreed to give him more time in the studio. Will you tell Sister I have to stay another day? The dorm people already said it was okay. No charge. I'll talk to her and Mama about this, but if I can't reach them, will you tell her as a backup? I don't want her to freak.
Sure. This sounds great. Will CS bring you home?
No, he has to hang here for a few more days. Herbert said he'd give me a ride first thing tomorrow.
Chi frowned.
Don't be grumpy, Cheeseburger. The guy's okay. He said he'd buy me lunch, too, because I gave him the drawing.
She sipped her water.
I'm glad I told you about the bruise. I was embarrassed, but, well, I'm putting it behind me and moving on with my art. It feels good not to have that secret.
Chi sipped his coffee and realized that, except for the question of what had happened to George Curley, he felt good too. Darlene talked on about the drawings she was planning, about London, about other people she'd met, and more. The Darlene he knew was back. After half an hour, he wrapped up the uneaten half of his sandwich.
I've got to get on the road. Take care and I'll see you soon.
Sure you don't want this?
Darlene took it.
Thanks, Cheeseburger. Be safe out there.
His next stop was Tsuki Pueblo. Caitlin had texted that her mother would leave a photo of Curly for him in a brown envelope under the doormat. Instead, the old woman handed the envelope to him. She wasted no energy on civility.
I gave you the picture in here because it shows the truck.
She tapped the envelope with her index finger.
Find that truck for my daughter. We need it, and she's the one who makes the payments.
Thank you for the photo. We'll do what we can. She made a snorting sound and closed the door. He opened the envelope, prepared to ask Mrs. Vigil for another photograph if the one she handed him was too much truck and not enough curly. There were three photos. The largest was color, and showed a small, slim Navajo man looking directly at the camera, standing at the back of a white pickup truck. The tailgate was up, and the truck looked new. The yellow and red New Mexico license plate and a dark blue bumper sticker showed clearly in the picture. There were also two small shots of the truck, including one that coincidentally captured Curly in profile. Chi put the envelope on the passenger seat of his pickup. He'd let the captain and the rookie deal with this. Maybe the department would issue a bolo, asking fellow law enforcement to be on the lookout for Curly in the Ford. Maybe Curly would give his wife or his mother a phone call and ease their worry. Maybe he'd come home. Or maybe the department would find his truck on someone's used vehicle lot in Gallup or Farmington or Chinle or Tuba City or even Flagstaff. Whatever. He'd done his part to solve the mystery. Time, finally, to head home. The storm that had stranded Bernie and Grants was long past, replaced by strikingly blue skies. Snow lay beneath the ponderosas as he crossed onto the Jicarilla Apache Reservation. Beyond that, the sandstone formations were partly buried beneath white caps. He passed the turnoff for Chaco Canyon and Ngezi, and was rolling toward the oil and gas country outside of Farmington. He was thinking about Bernie, the wonderful smell of her hair and the delicious smoothness of her skin, and how he'd missed her when his phone buzzed. He put it on speaker, and Captain Largo's voice filled the truck.
Where are you?
Chi told him.
Good. Take a nap if that appeals to you, and then come on in. I need you to work the late shift.
23. While she drove in the direction she'd seen Franklin take, Bernie called the Cibola County Sheriff's Department to describe Merrilee's stolen car and the man who drove it.
Too bad the interstate is open. That makes the search tougher, and the plows worked on the local streets last night.
Franklin might head out to the Malpais, she explained.
We'll contact the search crew and state police. Thanks for the heads up. Someone is on his way now to the house to talk to Ms. Cruz.
The Cibola County Sheriff's deputy sent to interview Merrilee about the incident was still there when Bernie returned. He was young and efficient and helped arrange cardboard over the shattered glass to keep the heat in the greenhouse. She couldn't imagine Wilson Sam doing that.
Bernie filled in some blanks and described Franklin's distraught behavior the previous night. The deputy took notes and then said,
"My boss asked me to tell you to check in with your captain."
"Sure thing."
Bernie grabbed her belongings and walked to her unit. She called the Shiprock station, expecting to talk to Sandra, but the captain answered,
"What about the old bones you hiked to? You never gave me a follow-up."
"Sorry, sir. It looked like another looted gravesite. The incident commander said they won't disturb it since I verified there was no sign of Mr. Cruz. Cultural Affairs knows about them. Well, I hope they do. I left a detailed message and sent photos."
"And what about the wings and roots problem?"
She told him about the anonymous donations that kept the program afloat, adding,
"They are having some challenges, but all the tribal money is accounted for."
"I need you back here ASAP to get Walker off my back. Tell the counselor what you learned. Did you find a place to stay last night?"
"Yes, sir, and there are some interesting developments in the story of Mr. Cruz and his disappearance."
She explained about the pot stolen from the trunk of her unit, the gunshot, and the stolen car.
"Did you mention your suspicion about the pots to the state police?"
"No, sir."
She added the Manzanares component. Largo was silent a moment.
"Interesting. The new FBI agent asked me if we knew anything else about Larry Hoffman, the ranger who died after that car wreck. I'll pass this along to her. She might call you. She's also interested in the looting."
"Yes, sir."
Bernie pulled onto the entrance ramp for the interstate. The highway was slushy and red from the mixture of salt and sand used to help clear it. Traffic seemed about normal. The sun was out, and added a glimmer to the frosting of snow on the lava beside the highway. Beauty all around her. Largo intruded on her meditation.
I'll bring Walker into the office now, and you can deal with her.
Yes, sir. The counselor's voice came over the phone, crabby as ever.
I've been trying to reach you for more than 24 hours, officer. Thanks a lot for being so responsive.
Bernie let the comment go. Counselor, I reviewed the Wings and Roots paperwork, and you're right. It seems that there are some discrepancies.
I thought so.
As I read it, the agency should never have agreed to take the tribe's arrangement. There was too little money offered for too many students. The program director and her staff and the board lived up to the stipulations of the grant. According to the minutes, they made attempts to notify the tribe that there was trouble with the ground rules, and those notifications were addressed to you, and, well, they were all ignored.
You must be wrong about that.
Bernie heard some muffled sounds, as though Walker had put her hand over the receiver. Then the counselor was back.
I was the contact person, and all they ever sent were big envelopes with the minutes and the budget reports.
Bernie thought about the next question. I know you're busy on the council. Could it be that some of the mail they sent didn't get to you, or didn't get opened? The phone went silent. Bernie spoke. Someone made anonymous donations to subsidize the group that the tribe had agreed to fund.
It was the director's own stupidity that caused the problem.
You mentioned that if there was no evidence that Cooper or anyone in the group had done something wrong, you'd lobby for more money for the kids.
I remember. I need to see the proof, and...
The sound from the phone became muffled again, more mumbling, then Walker's voice, impatient.
Someone says she has to talk to you.
A younger female voice came on the line.
Officer Manuelito, it's Annie.
Hi, Annie. Go ahead.
I need to tell you something important. Not on the phone. Can we please meet somewhere?
What do you want to talk about? Bernie heard Walker in the background, yelling something at Annie.
It's about Mr. Cruz. Just tell me now.
I can't, because it's about... Oh, Mom! Wait!
The background noise sounded louder, and then she heard Walker say, Cruz, and the rumble of Largo's voice. Then Walker was shouting something she couldn't decipher.
Annie, are you there?
After some silence, Largo came on the phone.
You still there, Manuelito?
The background noise had evaporated.
Are we still on speaker?
Yes, but Walker and Annie left. The mom wasn't expecting that sort of conversation. I told them to wait outside, calm down.
I knew that girl wasn't telling me the whole truth about Cruz. Maybe she knows something we can pass along to the search team. Can you put her back on the phone? I'd like to talk to her again.
And I'd like to lose 10 pounds by Keshmish. I'll check back with Walker when she cools off, but don't hold your breath. I doubt that girl really has anything important to say, but if she does, we'll need Walker there as a witness. I'll work on persuading her.
Thanks, Captain. Christmas is still a few weeks away, you know.
If Walker agrees to let you talk to Annie, maybe you can take her out for a burger or something. You'll get more information outside the station, even with her mother hanging over her like a bear with her cub. I'll talk to Walker about it. Tell her you'll have to record it. I'll have Sandra call you if she says yes. You need to do this ASAP.
Yes, sir.
2 hours later, the three of them, Annie, Counselor Walker, and Bernie in her uniform, squeezed around a table at That's a Burger. Bernie ordered hamburgers and Cokes for everyone, charging it to the office. Walker offered her a $5 bill, but Bernie waved it away.
I don't want you to think you can bribe me.
Stone-faced, Walker slipped the money back in her pocket. They sat silently until the food came and they'd had a few bites. Annie looked nervous. Counselor Walker seemed annoyed, as usual. Bernie focused on the food. Then she took her notebook and a pen from the backpack, turned on the recorder and started the session with the time of day, place, and those present. Annie, you told me on the phone that you need to tell me something more about Mr. Cruz, because I think what you have to say might be important. I'm recording this session and taking notes. Is that all right with you and your mom? Fine. Walker's voice was hard. Get it over with. Annie fiddled with the straw and then looked up. Does my mother have to be here? Yes, I have to be here, but Officer Manuelito is in charge and I'm not going to say anything. Pretend I'm back home. The girl fidgeted some more, then glanced out the window. Bernie leaned toward her. I'm listening. You said that you wanted to tell me something important about Mr. Cruz. You can start whenever you're ready. Annie put the straw down. So, do you remember how I told you that I heard Mr. Cruz walking behind me, and then I didn't hear him, and when I turned around, he was gone? Yes. You said he had a bell on his pack, and that's how you knew he was there. Is that right? Yes, yeah. Well, I forgot to say that we were on a tricky part of the trail. Tricky? Can you tell me what you mean? Get on with it, Annie. Walker's voice dripped with impatience. You, Bernie gave the counselor the behave yourself look she'd practiced on misbehaving teens. The attitude might bring repercussions later, but it worked to stop the interruption. Annie moved the index finger of her right hand to stroke each little gold ball in her ear. Tricky, you know, like dangerous or something. Part of it, I mean, the lava was real sharp, and there were cracks you could fall into, and some of it was slick because of the ice in the shade. So I kept looking down. I asked Mr. Cruz if I should go back and get my tent and my other stuff, and he said no, he would take care of it. He said that place where I was, that cave, was sacred, and I wasn't supposed to be there. He said I should walk back to camp as quickly and carefully as I could. Bernie heard her voice begin to grow tight, but Annie kept talking. He said he was glad I wasn't hurt. She stopped and took a gulp of her Coke. Annie's mother shifted in her chair, as if she wanted to inject something. Bernie gave her the look again and turned her focus to the girl. What happened next? Mr. Cruz told me to go first so the pace would be what I could handle. He said he wanted to see if I could find the way back without his help. I didn't tell you that already, did I? No, you didn't mention that. She sat without moving, staring straight ahead. So we were walking. I heard that little bell, like I said, and I kept going, thinking about how mad Cooper would be. The bell didn't ring all the time, I guess because of the way he had it tied onto the pack. She stopped talking, fingering her earrings again. Then I heard something different. A strange kind of noise. Like I told you, I was ahead of him, so I turned around, but I couldn't see him. I yelled, "Hey, Mr. Cruz, are you there?" But he didn't answer. And then what happened? Bernie saw Annie's eyes grow shiny, and then the tears on her cheeks. "Go ahead, it's okay." I ran back to camp, and Cooper was all over me about breaking the rules, so I made up a story that I hadn't seen him so she'd shut up. And I kept waiting for Mr. Cruz to come back. But he didn't. I thought he would be okay. He said he was testing me, and I thought that was it. Annie twisted a strand of hair between her thumb and forefinger and stopped talking. Do you remember any landmarks out there that could help someone find that spot? Landmarks? Anything like a tree struck by lightning, an unusual rock formation, a broken fence? We were following the Karens, you know? Annie sucked on her lower lip for a few moments. Why did they name those piles of rocks after a girl? Bernie smiled. It sounds like the girl's name, Karen, but it's spelled differently. C-A-I-R-N-S. So was one of those rock piles unusual? Annie nodded. One of the ones I saw right before I didn't hear Mr. Cruz's bell. There was a piece of lava on top with a hole you could see through. Bernie held her notepad out to Annie. Could you draw it for me? Counselor Walker slammed her hands on the table. Oh, for heaven's sakes, this is ridiculous. It's fine, Mom. Annie looked at Bernie. Go ahead. The girl put pen to paper, then handed the little book back.
It was kind of like that, but about as big as...
She stretched out her fingers and moved her hands apart parallel to each other. Like a volleyball.
A flat one, maybe.
Bernie added some words to the base of the drawing.
Could you find the place where you think Mr. Cruz fell?
I don't want to go back there ever. No way!
Walker stood up behind Annie's chair.
Can you shut up with the questions now? We have to go.
No, counselor. I have a few more things to ask her.
Bernie waited until Annie stopped crying. Walker glared at them both.
You told me about seeing the bones in that cave. Now that you've had a while to think about it, do you have anything else to say about that?
The girl looked at her fingernails on the tabletop. Bernie hoped that meant she was framing the truth, not conjuring a lie.
Well, I wasn't as brave as I made myself sound. I was crying a lot.
Walker bolted up.
I never should have sent you on that trip.
Mom, I knew I should have stayed at my solo site. I wasn't supposed to be in that cave. I just wanted to get on the van and come home. I was so scared out there.
Walker's face softened. Scared of what?
Everything. The noises, being by myself with no friends without you and my brother. I thought Mr. Cruz could lose his job because I'd gone where I shouldn't have, and so he had to go there too. He told me not to worry. He said he knew I could get back to the base camp, but if I got confused, he would help.
Bernie took a drink of her Coke, waiting to see if Annie had more to say. The girl looked toward the restaurant door and frowned. A curly-haired woman had come in, holding a briefcase. She made a beeline for their table.
Hi, Annie. Counselor Walker, I'm Rose Cooper, the director of Wings and Roots.
She stood behind the empty chair.
Hello, officer. If you're done with your interview, this lady and I have some issues to discuss.
24. Mom, Annie Rainsong said,
Mrs. Cooper is the one who gave me that volunteer job. You know, the one I can do before school? She's really nice and...
I know who she is. Giving you that job was the least she could do after what happened.
Walker turned toward Cooper.
You should have been taking better care of my daughter on that camping trip. She could have died from being lost and whatever drugs you let her get into. You...
Bernie put her hand up to stop the attack.
Save it.
She turned to Cooper.
I'm recording this interview with Annie for follow-up information on Mr. Cruz. I think we're almost done.
Cooper took a few steps back. The other patrons in the restaurant had put their own conversations on hold and were taking in the show. Walker's face became an angry mask, but at least she remained quiet. Bernie turned back to the girl.
Did you eat or drink anything with Mr. Cruz?
No, but... No.
But what?
When he first found me, he offered me a cookie. He had some that somebody had given him in a little sack in his backpack. I took two, but I was too freaked out to be hungry.
Annie laughed for the first time that afternoon.
Mr. Cruz always had cookies. We call him a cookie monster. These were little, so he put a handful in his mouth at once, like popcorn or something, and started chewing. He made a face. He said they tasted odd, bitter, and it was a good thing he was hungry. I knew he hadn't had anything to eat for a while because he said he always fasted with the groups, you know, to stay in sync.
Bernie thought about it.
What did you do with the cookies he gave you?
I put them in my coat pocket. I tried one when we were in the parking lot, you know, when Mrs. Cooper was passing out the phones. I only ate half. It tasted awful. I left the rest on the van.
You said he gave you two. What happened to the other one?
I guess it's still in my coat pocket, unless it fell out or something.
Annie twisted a lock of hair as she talked.
I found something else out there by the cave. I remember now. A little silvery disc. I put the cookie in the same pocket as that.
And where is the coat?
It's at home.
Bernie glanced at the notes she'd been taking as Annie talked. Annie, do you remember when we first met out on the Malpais? She nodded. You were scared, and you were exhausted. In those circumstances, people sometimes say things they don't mean, or forget to say something important. I want you to think about that for a moment, okay? She nodded again. Can I have some more Coke while I think? Before Bernie could answer, Walker snatched up the cup and went to the dispenser. When she returned, Annie had thought of something. I should have told you that he was a good guy who really cared about us kids, not a phony or a hater. I should have gone back to look for him. Sadness and regret pooled in the girl's dark eyes. If I had, maybe I could have helped him. I said I didn't want to go back there ever again, but I could do it if it would help find Mr. Cruz. Do you want to say anything else? When she shook her head, a few tears fell on the table. Bernie picked up the recorder and spoke into it softly, indicating that the interview with Annie Rainsong was over, and that the other voices were Annie's mother, Counselor Elsbeth Walker, and Rose Cooper, the director of Wings and Roots, who had arrived near the end of the session. She clicked it off and put it in her backpack. Bernie sensed that Counselor Walker's fuming had reached the explosive threshold, but Cooper spoke first. Counselor, I apologize for what happened to Annie out there. As the program director, I take full responsibility. But I was... Annie interrupted. Cooper silenced the girl with a look and focused on her mother, speaking quickly. I assume you've looked at the budget information you requested. I am seizing this opportunity to go over the figures with you like I have long wanted to do. If you have questions, I am prepared to stay as long as necessary to answer them. She took charge of the empty chair and set a folder on the table. You inject yourself into a private interview. Impose on my time as if I owed it to you. You've got a lot of nerve. I do. I'm beyond angry at the way you've been trying to eliminate the program without any basis, without any facts, only your opinion. You haven't even bothered to get the story straight before you start accusing us of misusing tribal funds. I have a lot of nerve because I am appalled that you would attack a good program that helps kids. Cooper glanced at Annie, who looked as though she wanted to crawl under the table or run out the door. The director put her hand on Bernie's arm. There is something criminal going on, all right, but it's not on our agency's end of things. Dom had figured out the problem with the tribal grants, and if he hadn't disappeared, all of that would have come out. Walker bolted to her feet and lurched at Cooper. You don't know what you're talking about. How dare you? Cooper was standing now, too, eyebrows drawn together, lips narrowed. The other customers in the little restaurant were still staring at them, probably waiting to see who would throw the first punch. Bernie pushed between the women. Stop it. You two need to act like adults, especially in front of Annie. Mom, please, chill out. The girl turned to Cooper. Do you hate my mom? Is that why you were so tough on me? No, honey. You came into the program with a bad attitude. It had nothing to do with your mom. Leave Annie out of this. Manuelito, you set me up. Walker reached for her daughter's hand, but the girl pulled away. Bernie took a deep breath, exhaling to calm herself. Listen to me. I didn't know Cooper was coming. Cooper said, Captain Largo told me you were here. Bernie motioned to the empty seats. You're together now. Cooper has the files. The information you've been saying proves misuse of tribal funds. She's here to answer your questions. Get this worked out, ladies. Talk to each other. Any more fighting and I'll have to arrest you both for disturbing the peace. Cooper looked embarrassed. I didn't mean to yell, but this program is, well, it's my life. Walker stared at the clock over the restaurant door and then back at Cooper. I'll give you 20 minutes. Mom, can I have some fries while I wait? Before Walker could answer, Bernie said, Annie, you mentioned that Mr. Cruz gave you a cookie and that it was still in your jacket. I want to have our lab look at it in case it made you sick. She turned to Walker.
I'd like to take Annie home so she can get the cookie and give it to me for the lab to check.
Go ahead. I'd like to know if that was how she got drugged. Leave her home with her brother.
Annie broke in.
But Mom...
Let's go. Bernie put her hand on the girl's shoulder. Don't argue anymore, okay? Mr. Cruz wouldn't want that. Annie slid into the passenger seat and started asking about the equipment in the unit. Bernie welcomed the change of subject and lack of conflict. Annie and her mother lived slightly off U.S. 491 in a manufactured house with a hogan next to it and a few sheep in a corral. A dog approached the car, barking energetically.
He's friendly.
Annie smiled.
He always does that.
Get out first and tell him to chill.
Are you scared of dogs?
Mostly, yes.
I didn't think you were scared of anything.
Annie opened the unit's door, and as soon as he saw her, the dog stopped barking and began wagging its tail.
Do you want to come on inside with me while I look for the cookie?
I do, but wait a minute. Bernie unzipped her backpack and found a plastic bag. You can put the cookie in this for the lab. Bernie climbed out of the unit slowly, keeping an eye on the black and brown mongrel and noticing that he kept an eye on her, too. She followed Annie to the house and waited while she climbed up a ramp and unlocked the door.
Dylan! Dylan!
Annie yelled louder the second time.
It's me! I've got a lady with me, too!
Bernie heard a grunt from a back room.
Who's Dylan? He's my brother. He's probably playing video games or something. Hi, Dylan. I'm Bernie. Hello back there.
A voice called back.
Hello out there. When is Mom coming?
Annie took the question.
I don't know. She's talking to Mrs. Cooper.
Who?
Someone you don't know.
So will you fix us something to eat? Chili dogs?
I'll do it in a little while.
Annie opened the door to the closet by the front door. She stared at the coats crowded inside for a moment and then grabbed a blue one and pulled it off the hanger. Bernie put a hand on her arm.
Stick your hand inside this plastic bag like it's a glove. Grab the cookie and then turn the bag inside out.
Annie's face filled with questions. Bernie showed her what to do.
The cookie might be tied to what happened to Mr. Cruz or to why you had to go to the hospital.
Annie patted the big pocket on the right side of the jacket, and then the one on the left.
It's not here.
Are there other pockets?
Yeah, wait a minute.
Annie slipped the coat on and ran her hands over the front, stopping to unzip zippers and pull open Velcro. She found some tissues, a quarter, a nickel, and a piece of candy. She frowned.
I guess I was wrong. Sorry.
Are you sure this was the coat you wore?
It's my winter coat.
Then Bernie saw her face light up.
I remember I used Mom's old jacket because she was afraid this one might get ripped or something.
Do you know where it is? Annie pressed her lips together, thinking.
Yeah, it's in the other closet across from Dylan's room.
Bernie walked with her a few steps to the back of the house, thinking about the difference between Merrily's grand home and this small, practical space shared by three people.
Hey, brother, company coming your way.
Bernie heard a squeaky sound and then saw a thin young man in a wheelchair.
Whoa, you're a cop. What did my sister do now?
Bernie squatted down so she could talk to the man at eye level.
Nothing. In fact, she's helping me to get to the bottom of a big puzzle.
That's good. Are you a friend of Mom's?
I respect your mom and her commitment to the people.
Bernie guessed that the young man was about her sister's age.
Dylan, are you going to school?
Some online courses. We have to get a van that can handle the wheelchair.
Behind her, Bernie heard the sound of hangers moving over metal, and then Annie was back, empty-handed.
I can't find it.
Dylan rolled to face her.
What are you looking for?
That old green jacket of Mom's that I wore to camp.
Look in the dirty clothes pile, silly.
Annie's grin brightened the hallway.
Good idea. I'll get it. Come on.
Annie led Bernie back to the front closet. On the floor in a plastic hamper, the girl found a green parka. Bernie remembered Annie wearing it, remembered thinking it was too big for her and probably let in the cold. Annie lightly patted the front pockets.
I found the cookie.
She used the bag to pick it up, sealed it, and handed it to Bernie.
There's something else, too.
Before Bernie could caution the girl, Annie reached her bare hand into the pocket.
I forgot about this. I found it right outside the cave with the... you know.
Annie opened her hand, and Bernie saw a small oval disc with a figure on it, and a ring of metal at the top for hanging it from a chain.
Officer Bernie, would you like it?
Bernie looked at it more closely. Writing around the edge of the medallion read, Saint Christopher, protect us. It stirred a memory.
Let me borrow it.
She slipped the medal into her pocket.
Did someone say cookie? Do we have cookies?
The voice from the back room had a comic lilt to it.
You better save me one.
No cookies, sorry, bro.
I heard you say cookie.
I was teasing.
Bernie gave Annie a look.
It was an old thing left over from camping. It might be why I had to go to the hospital.
Then no thank you. Can you help me change my shirt?
Bernie looked down the hallway toward the sound of the voice and back at Annie. Are you two all right here until your mother comes home?
Sure. Mom leaves me in charge in the evenings, on the weekends, when she has to go to meetings, stuff like that. Dylan helps me with my homework. He reads me recipes when I cook.
I can get dressed by myself, the voice said, but it's easier if somebody does the buttons for me.
Bernie raised her voice a little.
Dylan, I have some brownies in my car. Would your mom mind if you and Annie had some?
As long as it doesn't have nuts. I don't like those.
No nuts. They're chocolate.
Great.
Bernie closed the door, and she and the girl walked down the ramp into her car.
How old is your brother?
He's 20.
Annie looked down at her polished fingernails.
He got screwed up in a motorcycle wreck, but he's still pretty cool.
Bernie unwired the trunk and gave Annie the box of brownies she'd planned to take to Mama, and the girl went back inside. Bernie watched the front door shut behind her, and then labeled the bag with Cruz's cookie in it, looking at the cookie more closely. It was small and dotted with little bits of brown that looked like chocolate. She started back to the office and put her phone on speaker. Time to call Darlene and tell her she was proud of her. But before she could do that, Sandra came on the radio.
The captain needs you.
Largo's gruff voice filled the unit.
Manuelito, are you done at the restaurant?
Yes, sir. I left Cooper and Walker talking. It looked like they might work it out.
She told him about Annie and the cookie.
Good work.
There's something else.
Bernie told Largo about the information from Annie concerning Cruz's last whereabouts.
I'll pass it on to search and rescue.
Sir, Annie said she thought she could find the place.
I doubt that they'd want her out there, but I'll mention it.
Bernie hesitated before asking the next question.
Have you heard anything more about Michael Franklin, the guy who took a shot at me and stole Merrily Cruz's car?
No, I haven't. He's still out there somewhere. Why do you think he shot at you?
I don't know, sir.
She heard some muffled noise. Then he was back.
Two more things. The toxicology on Larry Hoffman shows that he died from an opioid overdose compounded by alcohol, and the new FBI agent needs to interview you about a lead on a case she's working that somehow ties into all this.
Me? Did she say why?
A fatal one-car accident with drugs and alcohol as a factor was usually not a matter for the FBI. Such things, unfortunately, happened regularly in New Mexico.
She's following up on the lead about Manzanares. Remember him, the state cop?
Largo didn't wait for an answer.
He told the investigators that you were first on the Hoffman scene and removed potential drug evidence that has now disappeared.
Bernie couldn't help herself.
Disappeared? Disappeared? No. He stole it out of my trunk during a blizzard. My guess is that Manzanares is into something, well, something off the books, and it stinks. So when does the FBI want to talk?
She's on her way now. You should be, too.
25. Bernie understood the value of making a good first impression, and she realized she was failing miserably as she sat in the tiny conference room at the Shiprock substation with FBI agent Sage Johnson across the table.
For starters, watching this blonde, about her age, maybe a touch older, look through her notes before she started asking the questions didn't sit well with Bernie. Her time was valuable, and this woman didn't mind wasting it.